Ladies and gentlemen, do my eyes deceive me? In this corner, wearing a smile, delightfully friendly Tales from the Crypt, and the gritty, gory challenger with an appetite for destruction, are you afraid of the dark? Is this Put Up Your Spooks?
This week's theme?
Opposite day.
In this week's episode, we're switching it up. We're flipping the script. I went for the least scary episode I could find of Tales from the Crypt, and Ryan is bringing what he thinks is the most horrifying episode of Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Indeed, it's true. I was just possibly unsurprisingly watching Are You Afraid of the Dark not for this show, just because I wanted to watch it, which I do like every other week, just watch 5 episodes of Are You Afraid of the Dark. Was gonna just go with the Dead Man's Float, because every time you talk about Are You Afraid of the Dark, you bring up the creature from Dead Man's Float, the red skull zombie, which is very awesome. But I randomly ended up watching an episode called The Tale of the Hatching, and I thought, oh shit, this one's actually got some gorgasms, and I think it's contender for scariest, goriest episode of Are You Afraid of the Dark. So without further ado, The Tale of the Hatching. Two siblings, Augie and Jasmine.
I'm going to stop you right there, Ryan. You have taken to skipping the Midnight Society altogether. Maybe it's because I'm only just getting into the show now, and I don't understand the politics of the Midnight Society like you do, but they were just dogpiling on this kid ruthlessly. Is that like a part of the show?
Frank, maybe even Kiki, I don't remember. Frank's, you know, he's the tough one. He's kind of the jerk. He's the Sawyer of the group. I've been watching Lost again, also. Yeah, Frank will never lose an opportunity to give someone shit.
What's the matter? Poor Davey upset about something?
Anyway, two siblings, Augie and Jasmine. Augie is the nerd. Jasmine is the cool-ass 90s chick with sunglasses.
So, I'm going to jump in one more time here, Ryan. The episode opens with a dog being murdered.
What?
Before the family even pulls up to the school, a cute white little poodle is sniffing around a manhole cover and then gets sucked in, and all that is left is a yelp of terror and a green trail of slime. I mean, bold.
Yeah.
Bold.
You know, you've got some villains when there's dogs a-killings. Just coined that phrase, but it's going to be my new catchphrase. So, Augie and Jasmine. Augie's the nerd. Jasmine's the cool 90s chick. Their parents dump them in a boarding school because they're going on a business trip or something for 6 months and they can't take them with them. I don't know, maybe they're going to, like, do Habitat for Humanity or something. I missed it if they said. And they really don't want to be there, but Augie is the voice of reason. It's like, you know, we've got to do this for Mom and Dad. We'll be fine. We can do it. So the second they get into the boarding school, a girl starts screaming somewhere in the depths of the school. The parents rush off. They find the girl in an empty dorm. And she says, oh, you know, I just had a nightmare, it's fine. And then the Taylors, who are the owners of the school, arrive. They introduce themselves, and they're like, not on our watch. The school bell rings, but it's a totally weird, chiming tone.
What's that?
Class change.
And Mr. Taylor explains that traditional bells are too, like, jarring, and they interrupt the learning process, so they use these weird tones. During their meeting, Augie's digital watch beeps, and Mr. Taylor fucking freaks out.
If we can...
And he explains, oh, I just get migraines.
So in my episodes, we usually have what's called time to shrew. Like, how many seconds elapse until a woman is painted in the worst possible light? I have realized that in Are You Afraid of the Dark, it's like time to kryptonite. Whether it's like a puff of air or right, a shrill tone, how quickly they introduce the secret weakness of right, the villains. So we're going to have to start calling that out.
That's right. Yeah, good call. They had their storytelling down to a formula. Right, early on, the parents leave, and you know, Augie gives his pep talk to Jasmine, but she says, I'm not wearing one of those lame wad uniforms. Hella 90s. Lame wad. And she also does the robot as they go into dinner. Which is also, maybe that's an 80s thing, I don't know.
That's an 80s
thing. But it's opposite day, so.
Ah.
So they have dinner, and for dessert, they receive huge bowls of what I lovingly refer to as the stuff. It's a gooey white oatmeal substance that the other students call sponge, with a U. But Augie and Jasmine are too grossed out to try it, and even on subsequent dinners, they can't bring themselves to eat the sponge. What show was it where the... Oh, it was Seinfeld, where Elaine was, like, looking for her sponge. It was a prophylactic device, and they stopped making them, so she, like, started hoarding sponge.
So you think you're sponge-worthy?
Yes, I think I'm sponge-worthy. I think I'm very sponge-worthy.
Next day, during school, some random kid is playing a contraband Game Boy. Mr. Taylor freaks the fuck out and takes it away. That night, but right before, you know, right before lights out, Augie pulls out his Walkman. He's going to jam out to some tunes, but the other kid tells him he better not get caught with it because the Taylors do not allow it, even though it's a bogus rule. Hella 90s. So in the middle of the night, the crazy weird school bell tones go off, and all the kids start filing to the basement like zombies. Augie and Jasmine follow them and find them spreading some weird sand crap on a bunch of crazy floating eggs in a huge water tanks under the school. They're justifiably freaked out, and just then the Taylors appear, so Augie and Jasmine have to feign like they're zombies and spread the weird sand, and the Taylors are like, there they are, I didn't think they were eating their sponge. But these kids don't want sperms in them, so it's all good. And then they walk away.
Would you say they're spreading rice in the ocean?
Call back. So Augie and Jasmine, Augie's like, I just want to cry and go into my bed. But Jasmine's like, we're following them. So they follow them back to their office, where they see them eating weird sand, drinking green slime, and peeling off their skin suits to reveal that they are fucking lizard people. And it's a really good lizard skin.
Was really cool lizard skin effect where you saw the guy's hand, but when he pulled up his sleeve, you could see that underneath the human skin was scaly, gross, slimy, green lizard flesh. And I also liked that they were taking their sand and their green goo cocktails out of big martini glasses,
yeah,
which will be a theme that connects these two episodes.
And they were licking their lips and bleh. Then Augie runs back to his bed and tries to tuck himself up to the chin under the covers, but Jasmine slaps him around and says, we're going to get out of here. This cannot stand, so I'm going to go get dressed. You be ready in 5 minutes. She leaves, and Augie has this crazy epiphany because he's a super genius. He looks up at the speaker on his wall, and he knows what's up. So he goes to Jasmine's room and knocks, but Mrs. Taylor is in there, and she has Jasmine captive. So in order to escape, Jasmine bites a huge gory chunk out of Mrs. Taylor's hand and runs away. The Taylors chase them to the basement until the kids find themselves in sort of a dead-end tunnel, whereupon the Taylors appear behind them and lock them in basically a big giant cage, and it turns out that they are now food for the master, because these lizard people are a race of
meat-eaters. All kinds of meat.
The master slash mother of the eggs is this crazy lizard demon, which is totally awesome. It climbs out. It's gonna eat them. The Taylors are like, you stupid idiot kids. You should have eaten your sponge. And
fog juice for days.
So much fog juice. Beautiful. Oh, man. I bet they were breathing out smoke for days after that. And their parents, their, like, show parents were like, you need to smoke more. Actors smoke. You've got to be cooler if you're going to get more parts. I don't know. Anyway, since Augie is a super genius, he has torn the speaker off his wall, wired it up to his Walkman, all of this in, like, mere minutes, because it was only a couple minutes till he went to Jasmine's room. He pulls it out. The Taylors freak the fuck out again, and they're like, no! But Mr. Taylor has completely forgotten which key opens the gate. They're trying to get the cage open, but Augie is too swift. He plays some radical heavy metal, hella 90s. And the Taylors, the master, and all the eggs explode into goo. It's a complete and total gorgasm. And the kids escape, and all the zombie kids wake up, and they're like, whoa, what the fuck's going on around here? Whoa. And they're like, We'll tell you later. I forget what they say.
Death by stereo.
Hella 90s. Jasmine is so cool in 90s, man. She's too cool for school, literally. So they all wander off to safety, but, dun dun dun, one egg is left intact and starts jiggling around. The end.
Two things to say about this episode. One, when night fell and the student body was all traveling down into the bowels of the school under cover of darkness, it was Dutch Angle City.
Yeah. Yep.
Everything underground at night was shot at a Dutch angle.
I just tune the Dutch angles out now. I don't even see them.
Two, feeding the kids sponge to hypnotize them into dusting the egg bath was so inefficient. If you're going to build like a trillion gallon underground holding tank and all the machinery and infrastructure, just have a little pipe that sprays weird egg dust on them.
But they wanted to make sure the kids were down there and docile so they would be able to feed all the kids, all the baby lizards.
Inefficient. But they're lizard people. What you gonna do?
I mean, they almost went extinct, so.
True. When Jazz bit Mrs. Taylor's finger and you saw her lizard flesh underneath the bite wound, that was really cool.
Yeah, man. Again, bravo to the effects person who had never worked in makeup effects before.
She is our hero.
She is. She should be the world's hero. We have to sing it out from the mountaintops.
I like that. Maybe we'll have a special episode where we just highlight her best work.
Yeah.
The master is pleased. She's been patient these 100 years.
My entry for Opposite Day is what many regard as the lamest episode of Tales from the Crypt, The Reluctant Vampire. We begin in a spooky house with portraits of vampires, an Iron Maiden torture chamber, and a coffin. So far, so good. An alarm clock goes off, and Mr. Longtooth climbs out and gets ready for work.
Oh, how I hate Mondays.
He pulls a cord and his coffin folds up into the wall like a sleepaway bed. On the radio, Rupert Von Helsing is being interviewed about his important mission of hunting vampires. And like everything about vampires, of course, the first thing he does is explains what vampires aren't. He establishes that they can't turn into bats, but they must feed on human blood.
I had a problem with that because he's like, it's an addiction. He says they must feed on human blood to survive. And it's an addiction to them. It's like a drug. But if you need something literally to survive, then it's not an addiction. It's your food. It's like saying turkey is an addiction for humans.
It is on Thanksgiving. but I take your point. So rather than being like really upset about the fact that Van Helsing is on the radio talking about his mission to destroy all vampires, he kind of takes it in stride. He dresses up in his night watchman outfit and he heads off to work. He works the night shift at a blood bank, and as soon as he walks in, his boss, Mr. Crosswhite, played by George Wendt, is ranting about how their supplies are too low and he may have to fire some people.
They're going into blood bankruptcy.
Oh, fucking yes, that's amazing. So George Wendt is just slobbering all over Sally, the secretary, this mousy office worker.
Harassment aplenty.
And, yeah, really bad, totally 80s sexual harassment. So Mr. Longtooth, the vampire, tries to stick up for her, but George Wendt just shuts him down. He's like, maybe you ought to start thinking about your job, mister. Yeah, that's what I thought.
Now show me that ass.
Sally's grateful. She sticks around to show her gratitude, and that makes Mr. Longtooth so horny for blood that his fangs pop out. And so to cover up for the fact that he's vamped out, he holds two fingers in a V-shape over his mouth, which in a regular episode of Tales from the Crypt might have a different connotation, but here it just artfully, it perfectly conceals his fangs, which is hilarious. So as soon as she leaves, he goes into the blood bank vault and raids the blood supply, and he makes a blood cocktail complete with a martini glass, and he's singing and dancing and having a ball.
Lovely, lovely, lovely.
over the lips, over the pangs. Say goodbye to hunger pangs!
But when he goes to revise the inventory of the blood bank, he realizes that the inventory book was taken by George Wendt. So he FFOs, and instead of going and killing the boss like he initially wants to, he decides to make up for the shortfall by going out in search of blood. He sees an old lady walking her poodle, and the old lady's complaining about the dangers of rampant crime. And Mr. Longtooth, he's a reluctant vampire. He can't bring himself to attack this innocent old lady. But just then, a mugger jumps out and accosts her. She racks him in the nuts and runs away, and Mr. Longtooth makes his move. He grabs the mugger, and he makes a quick health screening questionnaire. You know, when was the last time you had a blood transfusion or dental surgery? Do you have any diseases, et cetera, et cetera? And then he jabs a huge needle into the mugger's neck, and he drains his blood into, like, a big plastic water cooler jug. And when the blood starts to run out, he squeezes him for every last drop. And eventually, he lays him down on the ground and starts jumping up and down on his stomach, which honestly was quite gross. So he goes back to work. He replenishes all the little plastic blood donation bags that he drank. And then Sally comes back, and he vamps out again, covers his mouth with the V, and flees. Cut to a police station, where a homicide detective, played by the principal from Breakfast Club, is studying pictures of the bloodless mugger. And just then, a mysterious dark figure enters. It is Rupert Von Helsing, played by the giant bald mutant from The Hills Have Eyes. Mm-hmm. Michael Berryman, he is very tall, very bald. If you've never seen The Hills Have Eyes, he kind of looks like Sloth from The Goonies, but like in real life. And they also put these giant circular Coke bottle glasses on him to just make him look like an absolute total freak. But you know what? He is killing it in this scene. He's whimsical and charming, and I was just totally in love with him. Anyway, he warns the cops that it's a vampire. They don't believe him. End of scene. Back at the blood bank, George Wendt says that the bank is going through blood bankruptcy, and unless they have a massive increase in their supply, he's going to fire everyone except for Sally, who will always have a job sitting on his face. So Mr. Longtooth decides to save the day by going on a killing spree and draining all the criminals to stick in the blood bank's vault. I thought this was kind of weird. Like, stealing a car stereo should probably not have the death penalty. So anyway, he does manage to wipe out enough criminal scum to fill the bank vault, and the blood bank is saved. Everyone cheers. Meanwhile, back at the police station, Van Helsing comes to them with a lead. He's tracked a shipment of Carpathian soil to a nearby address. Mr. Longtooth goes home, only to be surprised by George Wendt. He knew that Longtooth was a vampire all along, and he pretended that the blood bank was going out of business to fool him to harvesting more blood. Now he's got to keep getting it, and it doesn't matter who he gets it from, or else George Wendt is going to kill him with his holy water-filled squirt guns, which was very Frog Brothers.
Try holy water, death breath!
Surprise number two. Sally hops out of the Iron Maiden. She followed her boss there and begs him not to hurt Mr. Longtooth. She also knew that he was a vampire. Longtooth pulls the cord that drops his coffin out of the wall and knocks George Wendt out. He hears more people coming, so he hides the boss in the coffin while he and Sally duck behind a sofa. And in my notes here, I just wrote, dumb. So the police arrive with Van Helsing. They find the coffin, and against the detective's protests, Van Helsing drives a stake into George Wendt and murders him. I thought, like, this was going to be the coup de grace. Like, I thought the cops were going to arrest Van Helsing for murdering a human, and that was going to tie up all the loose ends. But the police were just like, well, what are you going to do?
Open and shut coffin.
Open and shut coffin. And they let Rupert Von Helsing walk.
Yeah, in my notes, I have, why didn't they put Van Helsing under arrest?
So Sally begs Longtooth to turn her into a vampire. He pauses to give her a brief health screening questionnaire, and then he does. The end.
And for the fourth or fifth or 700th time, Sally says,
"This is so sexy."
So, a word about the actress playing Sally. In a typical Tales from the Crypt episode, was that?
She was no shrew.
No, this was opposite day.
Mm-hmm.
You would expect the ingenue or the love interest of the vampire to be very sexy, but this was played for comedy, and expectations and conventions were subverted. So she was a fairly normal older lady, and I think having her being all horned up and talking about how everything was sexy was for comedic effect. But what's funny is in the wraparound with the Crypt Keeper, he has like a total bombshell babe in like a tight mini skirt laid out on a desk with two fang holes in her neck. And it's like, yeah, this is what Tales from the Crypt wants to do. This is how they roll. So it was a very considered choice.
Also, Malcolm McDowell was no Prince Charming.
It should be pointed out that Mr. Longtooth the Vampire was played by none other than film legend Malcolm McDowell. Malcolm McDowell is probably most famous for Clockwork Orange. And that was 7 years into his career. So in 1971, he did Clockwork Orange, and he never stopped working since. So from like 1964 until 2020, he's been working nonstop. And I looked through his credits, and I really thought they were going to be more impressive. and I guess what's impressive is that, you know, he's a working actor, and that's all any actor can really hope to say. You know, who else can work consistently from the mid-1960s? But woof, not a lot of good stuff.
Mozart in the Jungle is fantastic.
He's fantastic. He's just not utilized very well very often. I was kind of shocked to see that he did much, much, much more superhero animation than horror.
Interesting. I have some thoughts about this episode, a few.
Let's hear them.
Mr. Longtooth. I didn't realize that was his name at first, and then someone called him Mr. Longtooth, and I was like, wait, did I hear that right? Anyway, he fucking loves blood. When he gets into, as you explained, when he gets into the blood bank and he's drinking the blood, he's like, woohoo, oh, I love blood. More blood in my belly. Oh, so much blood in my belly. And he explains to Sally Shorttooth that he could never go out hunting with his family. He couldn't kill a living person, thing. But then when he's killing that dude, the purse snatcher, in the alley, he's like, more of your blood, please. Whoa.
Thanks for your business.
And he's like dry humping him while he gives him the Heimlich maneuver. And he's like, more blood, more blood. I love your blood. And
first of all, you are impersonating Dr. Vink.
This guy, when he blood raged out, he was totally Vink factor high on Malcolm McDowell in his blood rage.
But I've got to tell the dear listeners, Ryan is a man of 1,000 voices, but when we do this podcast, they all become Dr. Vink.
Well, yeah, it's just...
Talking about your hands, Jerry.
No, that was Mr. Toggle. That was Mr.
That
Toggle.
That was Mr. Shriek. Oh, no, that was Toggle.
But yeah, he goes out of his way to explain that he's a pacifist and he can't kill, but then he's just fucking eviscerating fools and loving every second of it.
I think we are seeing the barely repressed vampire nature starting to surface.
Yeah.
It's like when he gets angry at George Wendt for taking the book, he's like, I ought to go to his house and rip his throat out. And he's
my parents. Yeah, anyway, there's a point where George Wendt is like, he's like, I got you on the ropes, see? And George Wendt is like, but where's a coffin? I don't see no coffin around these parts. And Mr. Longtooth is like, I'll show you my coffin. Do you want to see it? And George Wendt's like, yeah, actually, I kind of do. And then Mr. Longtooth spends like 4 hours tiptoeing his way over to the rope that holds his Murphy bed coffin into the wall, And he's like giving George Wendt sneaky little grinning looks like he's really about to get one up on him. And then he slowly unwinds the rope from the mooring cleat. And then he holds the rope and gives George Wendt another wry little grin before finally releasing it and knocking George Wendt over the head with it. Man, he really telegraphed that coffin knockout.
Full credit for using the word mooring cleat.
And Murphy bed.
And Murphy bed. George Wendt had established that he had the upper hand because he was dual-wielding squirt guns full of holy water. And when he was shooting, the vampire sparks and steam were flying off of him.
Like a tea kettle.
Yeah, my complaint about that scene was that previously in the episode, there was this neat little flourish where Mr. Longtooth would light candles and candelabras from afar. He would just point at them, and then sparks would erupt, and they would spark into flames, which was a really cool effect, I thought, to show that he was a magical creature.
Mm.
But then they reused and overused the effect when he was getting shot with the holy water squirt guns, where sparks were flying out. And I was like, well, now you've overused it. It's not as cool.
I thought you were going to say, why couldn't he telekinesis the squirt guns out of George Wendt's hand? But
that said, I loved this episode.
It was pretty
fun. I thought
fun.
It was hilarious and bizarre.
Even though it is opposite day, and try as they might, Are You Afraid of the Dark still ended up a kid's show, and Tales from the Crypt was not child-friendly in any way, shape, or form.
It sounds like we're getting into ratings. Yeah.
Except for my one final thought, which was, somebody's definitely getting AIDS from that blood bank. Those criminals were under duress. They could not be trusted to answer those questions properly.
Also, they were criminals. Yeah. You can't trust
you
anything.
Can't trust you can't trust a radio snatcher.
Have you had dental surgery in the last 72 hours?
I have,
you?
No! Oh, God!
That is music to my ears!
What I wrote in my notes as Lizard School, a.k.a. The Tale of the Hatching. Body count?
One dog, two tailors, one master mother, and about 100 eggs.
And maybe some undisclosed students in the past.
Right, but we don't count
the ones
those.
That wouldn't eat their sponge.
Off camera.
Those are off screen. Okay, reluctant vampire body count. We've got Mr. Crosswhite. We've got mugger number one. We've got all the muggers in the montage and various petty criminals, and then however many countless victims in the past. I'm going to give that one to the reluctant vampire.
Oh, if you're not counting the hundreds of lizard babies. These are baby deaths, man.
They're lizard baby deaths, and also the dog I'm not going to count as equal to the muggers
what?
On-screen deaths.
Dog death is paramount. You said it yourself. The
I
worst
said it.
Death
you didn't
to
even
see
remember
is dog
it.
Death.
I agree, but, you know, I guess it escaped your notice.
I skipped past it because I was running out of time.
Human body counts.
No, sure. Yeah, the tailors don't even count.
Hey, good point. All right. So, solid win in that column for Tales from the Crypt. Scare Factor, Lizard School.
I think Scare Factor was high on Lizard School. The music was kind of creepy. The basement pit was kind of creepy.
I think the creepiest part of Lizard School was like seeing 100 kids sleepwalk down to the bowels of the school. That was a pretty cool effect.
And I think that Master Mother monster would have scared little kids for sure.
Yes. She was pretty cool.
And they were like, she's going to eat you. You are dead. And she's going to shit you out.
Yeah, and they were like making fun of the kids and like reveling in their imminent murder. Pretty grim stuff. Scare factor for reluctant vampire, low.
Yeah, zero.
Nothing really scary in it. But it was a comedy. But gross factor, high. Every scene where he was putting random blood into blood bags.
Ugh.
I was like, that is really unsanitary and gross.
Yeah. AIDS blood, gross factor high. And also his many gorgasms as he took victims.
Yeah, that was also pretty upsetting. But we've got a sizable gross factor for the tailors and their lizard skin and their goop.
Slime drinking, lip licking, bite biting, head explosions. That master head explosion, like I feel like they built that master monster and then exploded its head, and I was so sad. Hopefully they had like an exploding version, and that and the master copy still exists somewhere, all rotten because it's made out of
foam latex.
Foam latex, thank you.
Even the tailors got reduced to wretched piles of steaming slime.
Oh yeah.
So gross factor pretty high.
And eating prophylactic sponge, gross.
Indeed. Theme of opposite day.
Well, as I explained before, they were pretty, you know, Are You Afraid of the Dark was pretty gory and scary, and Tales from the Crypt was pretty light and fluffy, but they still couldn't escape their DNA deep down.
All right, I'll call that one a tie.
Yeah, tie for opposites.
Lizard School, hella 90s.
Though it was opposite day, boy. Again, Jasmine alone, hella 90s.
Not a lot going on for totally 80s in Tales from the Crypt, other than like random muggers with switchblades and
right.
People stealing stereos.
Yeah.
And sort of
and hyper-sexual harassment.
Hyper-crime. So I'll give that one to Lizard School. What the factor?
I think Lizard School has a... I don't know. What do you think? I was going to say it has a high what the factor, but maybe for a story about lizard people, it doesn't. I don't think you would have seen that coming.
Well, props to them for, instead of just having generic monsters in the sewer or something, it was a race of primordial lizard men that had been driven to the brink of extinction, who were now putting on human costumes and launching a plot to strike back through our children to retake the surface of the world. I mean, strong.
Yeah.
Strong is killing a dog in your opening frame. But I gotta say, for me, the what the factor for Tales from the Crypt, where the guy who runs the blood bank knows
all
he has
along.
A vampire employee and somehow convinces him to go out and kill people for their blood so he can make money off of it?
Yeah, pretty high what the factor. And I did enjoy when George Wendt got his comeuppance by being stabbed through the heart, and when Van Helsing got zero comeuppance from the authorities.
Pretty awesome.
I also have a new rating to introduce, or perhaps it's not a rating so much as a final thought. My new rating / final thought is, what does it teach us?
Lesson.
Because often there are some sort of moral lessons or something, and I couldn't have picked a worse episode to debut this new rating on, because the only thing that Tales from the Crypt teaches us is don't fuck with vampires, I guess.
That is a good lesson.
It is a good lesson.
That is like a life lesson.
And the only thing that Are You Afraid of the Dark teaches us is be wary of lizard people. They're basically the same lesson.
Also a good lesson. I mean, now more than ever.
And don't eat the strange
reptilians.
Goo.
You know what? I wish you told me that yesterday. I was eating egg dust and sand and drinking some cocktails of strange green goo. So, body count, Tales from the Crypt, scare factor, Are You Afraid of the Dark? Gross factor, tie. Theme, tie. Totally 90s, Lizard School. What the factor, Tales from the Crypt. Lesson learned. Tie.
Is this a tie?
It's a tie game.
It's
we need
a
to
tie.
Find some other criteria.
Oh man, we need to do the shootout.
Star power?
The spook off. No, because that's a ringer.
Wraparound.
That's also a ringer. You can't compete with Crypt Keeper.
Then I think it's clear that the thing that edges it out, Tales from the Crypt, the Reluctant Vampire.
Man, I really thought this was going to be like a Jonathan Lipnicki-style little vampire.
Do you know the human head weighs 8 pounds?
Mr. Longtooth knows.
Rupert Van Helsing probably also knows.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to YouTube and I searched for the Reluctant Vampire. The first hit was Tales from the Crypt. The third result was the Adam Ant movie we talked about in the last episode, Love Bites, a.k.a. the Reluctant Vampire.
Huh.
But the second search result was an ASMR video called The Reluctant Vampire. And for those who don't know, these are clips of soft sounds like whispering and rustling that give people an autonomous sensory meridian response.
Which I'm wildly susceptible to, by the way.
Really? Which is a fancy word for eargasms.
Yeah, it's only for certain things. It's not like crinkling paper and shit doesn't do it.
You're in for a treat, I guess, because I'm going to send you a link right now to this ASMR video for the Reluctant Vampire.
All right, I need some spine tingles today.
I'm a vampire. Yes, vampires are real, and it's not like the movies, actually.
Rerun for your life.